Hello and welcome along. It's Andy, your host on this here podcast.
Hello, and here we are, episode 13. Unlucky for some, hopefully not. We'll see. Wedding Professionals podcast, crash and burn or carry on. Let's see. Anyway, this one is Kesh from KSB Beer and Bar Supplies. Chap I see at all sorts of weddings, and I'm sure you do too. Always hard working, always seems to be running around at 100 miles an hour, always seems to be there early, always seems to stay late. So, yeah, let's get on with it. And it's Kesh from KSB Beer and Bar Supplies. Here we go. So here we are in the leafy suburb of Oldbury in the West Midlands, which is just trees for as far as the eye can see. And I'm with Kesh from KSB Bars. Welcome to the pod, Kesh. Thank you for sparing the time.
No, thank you, Andy. Thank you so much.
Now, I've seen you at jobs all over the place, and you always seem to be working like hard work, dragging in barrels, dragging in glasses, building bars. It's just like non-stop hard physical work. So does that pretty much sum up your day?
Most definitely, and all the pre-work leading up to it as well. So it's just a continuation of a hard graft.
Okay, so who actually kind of books you to begin with? Is it the client themselves, or do planners get in touch and want to book you, or is it the venues, or who makes the first contact for you?
It's a lot of what you've just mentioned there. So we've got really strong relationships with a lot of caterers, a lot of strong relationships with event planners.
Yeah.
And we do have a lot of venues that we've continuously worked with. So a lot of it comes from recommendation just from the industry.
Yeah.
And also we've got a lot of past clients from families that booked us before, and they've just continued to book us. So yeah,
so it's so you become lots of like different family bar.
Yeah,
keep
absolutely. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people have got my telephone number stored in their phone book.
Okay, so we're here in a fairly sizable unit in Oldbury, but this didn't just appear out of nowhere. So where did you actually? How long have you been in the business? Let's start there.
Okay, KSB beers start trading in 1994.
Whoa.
Yeah, 1994. So there's not actually many people that know this, but it wasn't actually started by myself. It was started off with a really good family friend of mine.
Okay.
And his younger brother, we've known each other since like 11 years old. And so I started in 1996.
Okay.
So I started 2 years after.
Right.
Straight out of school. And next thing you know, I've got access to all of these weddings. Weddings were obviously completely different back then. I've been doing it for nearly 28 years.
Wow. Wow. And did it start with weddings, or did it start with other functions?
Yeah, so mainly weddings. But it started off with kegs of beer at people's houses.
Okay.
People's houses, back of a marquee. And you know, people used to book community halls back in 1994, and maybe schools, or we used to have a local swimming baths in West Bromwich where every single wedding took place there.
Because obviously there's no bar there at all, is there?
There's nothing there, yeah. Okay. But there wasn't no bar back then. It started off with trestle tables.
Yeah.
Trestle tables with a bit of white roll, and wasn't even cloth. It was paper roll. Couple of pumps and and about 20 kegs, because that's how much beer people used to drink back then. And then in 1996, when I started, that's when we started to build these mobile bars. And I can probably confidently say that we are the first people to bring a mobile bar to a wedding.
Custom built bars.
Absolutely.
Okay. And those bars that you do turn up with, I mean, we did one at Ragley just last week. Is that your bar, or was that supplied?
So that particular bar was Fuse Marquees.
Okay.
So we had to bring everything else that attaches to it. So the actual beer pumps, the cooling systems, all of the glassware, everything that we needed to do. But we could have built that bar if the client obviously needed us to build that bar for them.
Yeah. Fuse actually build some massive marquees.
Amazing.
Don't they?
Absolutely
incredible.
Amazing.
They do good work. So you were sort of saying that you had to bring your own glassware, your own pumps, this, that, the other, one thing, another. Logistically, where do you start planning what equipment you're going to take to an event?
So it starts from the initial client contact. You know, they give me the guest numbers, the total guest numbers. And just from, as a rule of thumb now, I've got to that point where I understand what is going to be consumed and, you know, for the duration of the event that we're doing. So, you know, if somebody says to me that there's 500 guests and we've got an unlimited cocktail package, which is unlimited, I don't think we've ever ran out. I just know that we need to bring a ton load of glassware, a ton load of ingredients. And I do everything where I always make sure that we're not going to run out. So, my team don't like it because we fill too many vans up to get to site, and then we end up bringing a lot of stuff back. But I just don't want to be that company that
better
runs
that
short
way
off.
Than the other. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And so for a wedding of let's say 500 guests, how many barrels of beer or whatever do you kind of take along?
So for the 500 people, I would probably be taking about, depending on how many ranges that they choose, somewhere along the lines of about 6 to 7 kegs. Whereas it's got to the point now where there's been a shift in drinking trends.
Okay.
So yeah, so when people used to, like I said, back in 1994, we could be doing a function for 200 people, and half of that is, you know, women that are not going to be drinking lager. We'd easily get through about 5 kegs.
Okay,
but right. Now we're doing 500 people, and we may only use 2 to 3 kegs. So okay. It's kind of there's a massive shift.
Is that because people are switching to more cocktails and things, switching away from just a traditional pint of lager or bitter or whatever?
Absolutely. So you mentioned bitter. I can't even tell you the last time we've put on bitter anyway. But yeah, people are a bit more health conscious. And I know, still drinking full fat Coke with vodka and stuff. It's still got everything in there. But everybody just shifting. And I think it's how they feel when they're, you know, holding a cocktail or a spirit rather than, you know, a big chunky pint.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that. And how do you go about creating those cocktails then? I mean, there's some standard ones, but obviously alcohol-free as well. You've got to cater for the non-alcoholic drinkers. Yeah. So, I mean, and I've seen your staff, I think at Ragley they spent probably a good 3 hours...
Prepping.
So, how long does all that sort of stuff actually take you? How early do you have to be at a venue to make sure that you're ready for when the doors open or when the guests arrive?
Yeah, so I've got my standard for that is to be there 5 hours prior to the event starting, from the first guest picking up a drink. So that means that we've offloaded the van, we've built the bar, we've got everything where we need to be, where it needs to be in station. Hmm. So when the mixologists arrive, so they arrive 3 hours prior to the event, they've got everything in front of them. They don't have to think about anything else other than, here's my limes, here's my mint, here's my garnishes, here's my vodka, whatever it is that they need to then get prepared. And even if we're standing around for an hour, once we've done all of that, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Because I know that I've covered every single eventuality, and if something has gone wrong somewhere along the line, I've got a window.
Yeah, you've got time.
I've got a window to get something sorted and get it done. So that's why we arrive as early as we do. And like I said, from a mixologist, they've got, prior to the event, they've got a spec sheet from me. Hmm. So they know exactly what needs to go in each glass, what quantities. So if I have to shift somebody onto a different drink, there's not going to be an inconsistency.
Okay.
So if you speak to bartender one and bartender two, you're going to get exactly the same drink. You're not going to get a different version of the same drink.
Oh, that's interesting. And those mixologists that you're talking about, are they kind of freelance bar people that you can hire in?
Yeah, so they are freelance. And I think a lot of the bar companies, in the Midlands right now and wherever nationwide, they're all using freelance mixologists.
Yeah.
However, I'm in a lucky position that we're so busy throughout the year, I'm able to have the same pot of mixologists.
Yeah.
And they know exactly how we need to operate and how we need to work. So we get that consistency for every single event.
And the logistics of knowing how, what quantity of, I mean, how many kilos of limes, for instance, went to Ragley Hall?
Yeah, so, for Ragley Hall, I think there's about 200 limes.
Right.
And when you think of 200 limes and you cut them into eighths, yeah. That's a lot of limes.
It is.
Yeah, it's a lot of limes. And unfortunately, there is some wastage at the end of it. But, you know, like I said, I'd rather be over-prepared.
In terms of kind of billing the customer, so at an English white wedding, for instance, normally it's a pay bar and somebody will walk up, order a pint of lager and pay, you know, whatever price of a pint of lager. What is a price of a pint of lager these days?
In Birmingham, about £3.50.
Bloody hell. See, a long time since I drank. But of course, you're just handing it across the counter free of charge to all the guests. So how do you stock take all that that you're selling and therefore what you're then charging to the customer?
So, like I said, you know, we base it on numbers. It's all a numbers game. And if there is 500 guests at the event, and we provide, say, for example, you know, a choice of six drinks on unlimited package for our cocktails, my rule of thumb on that is that I know from 500 people, there's going to be a certain percentage that I'm not going to be drinking, but out of that 500 now, majority of the people are drinking those drinks.
Okay.
And if they're not drinking the alcoholic version, they're definitely drinking the mocktail version. Yeah. Sometimes the mocktails are more popular than the cocktails. Okay. And the cost of making a mocktail and a cocktail, it's minute.
Yeah.
In regards to the actual unit price ingredients. Okay. I have a rough guide to say that if I've got six drinks on the menu and there's 500 guests, I at least want to be making 300 of each one of these drinks.
Yeah.
For me to know that for a four-hour window, we're not going to run short.
Okay, so basically you're just doing it on numbers of guests,
yeah,
and you're charging a quick... Right,
yeah.
I've got it. Yeah, okay.
Sorry if I didn't answer that question.
No. That's perfect. I didn't... Because I've never really thought about how it was charged. It's interesting. So what's the biggest event you think you've ever catered for, ever done? This is kind of one of my usual questions, like when did you do a job and you arrived and thought, wow, you know, we're here now, this is the big time?
It's a really tough question, because honestly I've been involved in some absolute showstopper of events.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, for us, It's a normal day,
yeah,
because we prepared for it exactly the same way that we would prepare for any other event.
And of course, I suppose you've got your head down behind the bar, so you don't really...
Right now, when I go to events, I'm still really hands-on with events.
Yeah.
But there is times that I do try and step away a little bit and let my guys do it. If anything, they push me out the bar and I'm like, just get out the bar, you're in our way. And I'm like, yeah, but I need to do this, I need to... No, we've got it. So then I can spend more time speaking to guests while they're there, speaking to the client, speaking to suppliers. I find that, you know, I build relationships with suppliers better when I'm not behind the bar,
because you
get to have a bit of a chin wag, you get an understanding where they're coming from. And it just, for the next event that you're doing, you know, if everybody's under pressure, you know each other, so you understand that this is not that person right now. They're just under pressure and you just kind of try and chip in and get stuff done.
Yeah. Can you see yourself in 30 years still doing what you're doing now, or have you got ambitions to build KSB larger, bigger? What could you do?
I'm 44 this year.
Congratulations.
So, thank you very much. I don't think I'm going to be doing this for another 30 years. if we are around for another 30 years, which hopefully so, it will be me definitely not on a hands-on role. You know, I'll still love the customer interaction with the brides and grooms and the dads and the uncles, you know, before the date. I love that part of it.
Oh, okay.
I love the selling of my business to the clients, because I've got a real big passion for it. I know how good we are at what we do. So I love that side of it. And I love, after we've executed the event, you know, the reviews that we get, the messages that we get, that's my payment.
And that really is the point of this podcast, is to kind of showcase, because a lot of the people, most of the people in our business are completely passionate about what they do and they excel at what they do. And I've always felt that there's nobody kind of flying the flag and going, yeah, you know, look here, look over here, yeah. We're great. Which was why I started doing this, really. You're talking about the hard physical nature of the work before you've actually served even a drink. How do you keep your energy up and keep yourself motivated to keep going?
I think we've been doing it for as long as we have. And we are at that point now where our bodies are just conditioned to doing this craft.
Unlike
and,
mine.
Yeah, it is. And you know, we are generally, me myself personally, I am generally a gym goer, so I keep myself quite fit in that sense. But some of the, you know, the younger guys that I have working for us, they sometimes can't keep up with us in the physical aspect of it.
No, it's the same for me. I see a young freelance cameraman and he'll be sitting down and going, look, you know, you're 20 something, you should be full of energy, and you know, I'm the one that should be sitting down full as of the old bloke.
No, so we've kind of like we're so accustomed to it now, and we're just used to it.
Yeah. And I guess working hand in hand with other suppliers. So, I mean, Black Velvet, we were working with the other day. You've got to be hand in glove with Sharon to know exactly what she wants and when you're going to be serving and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one thing that, you know, we're really good at. From the point that we're doing the planning stage and to the execution on the day. Once again, I've got amazing relationships with a lot of suppliers, to the point that, you know, I can just turn up to their office or their base and just have a sit down and have a bit of a chin wag with them, and then whilst we're there sometimes we talk work, but 9 times out of 10 we've just got to that point now where it's
socially
really good tight community, and we all know what our end goal is, and our end goal is always going to be, you know, be the best at what we're doing.
Is your job fun?
Absolutely. Love it. When me and my wife joke sometimes, where if I ever, you know, decided to shut up shop or leave or step away, she's like, I don't know what you're going to do with your time. Because your phone's constantly ringing, you're constantly talking to somebody, you're constantly arranging something or planning something. So if that goes, she's like, your identity's gone.
Absolutely. Yeah. You were saying you could sort of came into KSB.
Yeah.
A couple of years after its inception. So was there a period of mentoring from the previous guy, or was it just like, here you go, get going, go on, go and run a bar?
There were definitely mentoring, but it was more so, back then, it was more so like, this is how you pour the pint. which is great. But, you know, so the original owner, his initials are KSB, so that's where that comes from.
Yeah.
But
there was me thinking it was K.
People make up their own little versions of what KSB stands for. But he's still, you know, very involved in my life. So, you know, I still treat him as my older brother. So it's really good. But I think a lot of it was that they had so many different things going on.
Yeah.
You know, they had shops, they had pubs and stuff, and it was kind of, this kind of ended up just leaning towards me, and I just had, I think, more of a kind of passion in regards to being on time. I'm a very timely person, being on time, making sure that everything's done, you know, getting stuff there, getting stuff back. And then it just kind of, I just ended up just being more involved in it than they did. But they were just happy that it was being
run. I was going to say, from his point of view, he could just sort of hand it over and go, go on then, get on with that and sort it out.
Yeah,
brilliant. So here we are, just breaking in again for my usual request, and I won't shut up about it, but please, if you're enjoying what you're listening to, then please share it out there on social media. Get the word out. A couple of you are, and it's much appreciated. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for Lucy for your kind words online. It's very, very much appreciated. Please share it. That's the biggest way you can help and support the Wedding Professionals podcast. Right. Let's get back to it. Kesh from KSB Beer and Bar Suppliers. On we go. And also, you know, all these hours that you're talking about, your work-life balance, how does that sit? This is a question that comes up for virtually everybody as well, because what we do is a relationship-unfriendly business, I think. You know, you can be leaving at 7 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, getting back at 2 o'clock the next morning.
Yeah.
So how does that, during the week, have you got downtime?
That's one thing I'm very strict about in regards to the work-life balance side of it. Don't get me wrong, obviously, we still have to do stuff during the week, but I do school runs every single day without fail. I do a morning school run, then I do 11:45 school run, then I do a 3:30 school run. I'm involved in kids' swimming classes, gymnastics, all that stuff. I get to see all of that. I don't want to miss any of that.
Brilliant.
That's really important to me. The downside is on the weekends when the kids are actually free to have, you know, to go to a park or to go to, you know, a festival or whatever it is, it's not available.
Yeah.
Not available for that part. So that part I'm missing.
Yeah. So there is a rise of cocktail bars. So how do you think your competitors look at you? Do they look at you with envy or do they look at you and aspire to be what you are?
So first answer is there is a lot of bars popping up, cocktail bars, mobile bars popping up in the last few years.
Mm.
The thing with cocktail bars and especially mobile cocktail bars, it's actually quite an inexpensive startup.
Okay.
So because realistically, if you want to be a one man band and you've got a garage, and we've all been there, we've all started from somewhere, we've all started there, and you've got a garage, you need some wood. You need some wood to make a bar.
Okay.
And then, you know, you get some hip sheets like everybody's using.
Yeah.
Dance floors, DJ booths, bars. You make the bar look pretty. You go on to, you know, you go on to some social media feed and say mixologist required for an event. You hire some glassware in. You buy some alcohol. You're a cocktail bar. You're a mobile cocktail bar.
Easy as that.
Very inexpensive. Very inexpensive. The part that sometimes the clients can kind of get bamboozled with is that why we would charge so much and this new company would charge this amount.
Yeah.
I always say this to the client, what you've got to remember is that the new companies are using your event as a trial and error. Because right, if it's their first event or the second event, they've got no data in regards to what they're going to use, what they're not going to use. They've not really formed any relationships with any of the mixologists, because mixologists can just basically turn the phone off on the day and say,
not
coming in.
Yeah.
So I always say to, you know, my clients that we are here. And if anything ever goes wrong, we're still here. You're going to get to come and see us.
Yeah.
When you know, if something goes wrong with your event and you only get one shot at it,
sure.
We can't say we're going to come back and tomorrow we'll do it again. Yeah. You've got that one day and if you get it wrong, you get it wrong. So that's the thing with, you know, cocktail bars. They are, you know, you can easily set one up, but the execution and the delivery on the day is completely, completely different. Mm. We're consistent, you know. There's never going to be a time where day one we're going to be, you know, an excellent job, but day two we're not going to do a very great job.
Yeah.
We're consistent throughout.
Yeah.
But with the new guys, I think some of the new guys spend a lot of time on the social media, and obviously, you know, the social media have some great benefits, but then at the same time, social media can sometimes be a little bit deceiving in regards to, you know, how people operate and what they're doing. So, but I'm just like really transparent with what we do. Ours is a really honest company. You're never going to come to our bar and you're going to stand in a queue waiting for a drink, because like I said about the numbers earlier, we've got the numbers right.
Yeah.
We've got the numbers right. We've got the staffing right. We've got everything right, on the sense that when you come to the bar, you can have a bit of a chat with the bartenders if you want to, but you will have a drink in your hand while you're having a chat.
Sure.
You're not going to be watching us thinking, can I please have my drink?
It's interesting what you say about social media, because it always makes me smile to myself a little bit when, I don't know, a waiter will be walking around with their phone filming and they'll be putting it on their social media and it's like, this is my event. You know what I mean? And all sorts of suppliers walk around when I'm trying to do room shots, for instance, and they're wandering around with their phones up in the air filming. Yeah. And so you're right, social media can be very deceptive, because anybody can make an event look sexy and like it's their own.
Yeah.
And actually it's not. So what's your approach with social media?
I've got better at social media. I don't, you know, if I'm at an event, what I do tend to do is, you know, I will give a snippet of what we're doing on that day in regards to what kind of drinks we've got. I have a look at, you know, the guests with drinks in their hands, because they've actually got a drink and they're just standing at the bar.
Yeah.
And then I've got a thing where obviously I'll make sure I tag in the other suppliers, I want people to understand that, you know, we're constantly with the same suppliers all the time.
Mm.
And the reason that we're with the suppliers, same suppliers all the time, is because we're all good at what we do.
Yeah.
We're all good at what we do. And we work really, you know, we work really closely together. Just yesterday, I put up a social media post of me and, you know, he's a friend of mine, with a catering company. Just to show the outside world, you know, the people looking at our social media, to say that we are actually really good at working with each other. You're not going to have no problems, you know, with getting lots of different vendors together in one room to execute your wedding. We're all there with the same goal. We want to make sure that your event is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, something I noticed at Ragley the other day was, well, like with your bar, because it was a very rustic sort of themed event. You had straw bales and everything. Everything just looked so on point. And, you know, how much effort goes into making sure that the bar looks the part as well as everything else?
Yeah, that's a massive thing. Because we can't just turn it with an LED bar when there's, you know, this whole rustic thing happening. So this is all at the planning stage. So it's, like you said, it's not just about drinks. The one thing that I do tend to find is that in the pecking order, when a couple are, you know, looking to book their event, there's a bit of a shift there as well. So before, it used to be the case that, well, what we're going to do is we're going to book the venue, and then we're going to book some food, because those are important, you know, because everybody needs to get fed. It's got to the point now where clients are not, there's no right or wrong answer to this. Obviously, if that's their, you know, how they want to do it in their pecking order, they will go to, say, for example, you know, a DJ or a decor company.
Yeah.
And then they'll kind of get to the venue, and then they'll think about the food, and then they'll think about a piano player, cameraman, and normally 9 times out of 10, drinks is kind of the last thing that they think of.
We need
to give somebody some booze.
Yeah.
And so by that point, what's happened is, everybody's spoken to the couple by then, and they're already kind of got so many ideas in their head of what they can do and what, you know, what they can't do. And a lot of the time, sometimes the bar's already sold to the client from a DJ.
Okay.
So the DJ said, well, actually, we're doing the DJ, we're doing the dance floor, we'll give you a bar as well. Doesn't really make that much of a difference to us. We, you know, as long as the bar's designed the way that a bartender needs to use it.
Okay.
It's aesthetically outside fantastic, you know what I mean? They look absolutely amazing. But if it doesn't do what we need it to do inside the bar, where we're going to stand and where we need to basically grab one thing from here and grab one thing from there, then that slows us down.
Mm.
And if we've got no storage, where are we putting all of our equipment? Where are we putting our glassware? And it's a massive knock-on effect to us.
That's interesting. You see, I'd not even considered that. I mean, the space behind the bar, like you say, has to be tailored. I suppose that comes back to your years of experience of knowing where stuff needs to be, one side of the bar or the other, and how many bar people you've got operating in that space.
Well, so I'll give an example. So Ragley Hall, initially on the plan, it was a 4-meter circle bar when we had the planning meeting.
Okay.
So obviously I was in that planning meeting, and I was like, that's just not going to work for us, you know, because we had 11 staff members that day. So I said, that's just physically not possible for us to do what we need to do. So I said, we need to elongate it, you know, make it an oval shape, make it 8 meters, make it 6 meters. And, you know, even still then, it was a little bit tight. But, you know, we had obviously access to different parts of the marquee to do what we need to do. So for us as a bartender, we just need to be, the bartender just need to be making 3 simple moves. So basically they're able to step right, step left, step back. And that's it. They shouldn't move any more than that. And everything should be within reach. And if everything's within reach, that's when you get a speedy service. If you come to a bar and the person doesn't know where, you know, the Prosecco is or the vodka is or whatever, they're standing there looking for that item, thinking, where's that? And then by that time, you're just like, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
But he does. It's just that the bar's just not organised.
Yeah. So what about making sure that people get adequate breaks and all? Do you have to pay attention to that as well and give people time away from the bar?
Yeah. 9 times out of 10, they tend to find that time themselves, to be fair. But it is something that, you know, the one thing that when I brief my guys at the start is that if you need to leave your station and your drinks are topped up, they're readily available on the bar, then that's fine. But you need to tell the bartender next to you to say that, cover me, I'm just going to quickly go out for, you know, a toilet break, or I'm going to quickly grab some food or whatever it is. And then it's always covered in that sense, because if we all decide to go at the same time, it's like people are going to be looking, you know, where are people?
Yeah. Is there any unfulfilled ambitions that you've got in the industry?
I've never tapped into the corporate market. We are 100%. We're a wedding mobile bar company, and that's the way it's just panned out.
Yeah.
So we've never had an opportunity to do, you know, anything on the corporate side of it. I'm 100% sure it will be the same service. You're just doing it for a doing it for a corporate company and not
conferences and things
conferences or even like festivals and stuff like that. I've never lots of people have said that to me, saying, why don't you get involved in festivals? But festivals goes back down to you know, if it rains and you're selling your products out there, you're not, obviously nothing, you know, nobody's paying for it, or you're selling it, and if it rains or if it's a bit of a washout, then you've done all that effort and you just don't know what your return's going to be from it.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of sometimes steer away from that. Perfect example, I was actually at a festival on Sunday, and there was weather warning, so they, halfway through, they just, everybody had to vacate. So for all the vendors that were there, that would have been a really tough day, thinking, well, I've had like 6-7 hours worth of sales.
Plus, presumably at a festival or whatever, you've got to pay to be there.
You've got to pay to be there. Yeah, absolutely.
And not an insubstantial amount either, I wouldn't have thought.
It's a lot. It's a lot to put up a pitch, because they just know how much money you can potentially make from it.
Yeah. You're probably better off sticking with weddings.
Weddings, I understand. Weddings are not. Weddings prepaid.
Yeah.
And obviously you can kind of factor in what you need and what you don't need.
Yeah. Do you ever go as a guest to a wedding where there's another bar and sneak an eye over the, that's how you're doing it, is it? Or talk to me about that.
I have been to a couple of weddings. Funny enough, I've actually been to events where we've done the beer, for example, the draft beer, and as other companies have done the cocktails.
Yeah.
And I try not to look. I honestly try not to look, but you just can't help it, because then when you see that queue and you know, I'm standing there just sweating, thinking, oh, when's that queue ever going to go down? And then I just see that, you know, that in the nicest possible way, they've got it wrong, because, you know, the bar's 2 meters wide, and you know, there's the event's for 400 people, and when you think about a bar for 2 meters wide, you can only get 2 people behind a two meter bar. There's physically no more space for anybody to do what they need to do. And you know, and then I can see that the client's potentially got the best price. I get that side of it.
Yeah.
You know, I absolutely get the side of it. They got the best price. However, the company have got it wrong, in the sense that they've sold the client that dream to say that we can do this.
Yeah.
Where they should know that it's physically not impossible. It's physically impossible to do what they're trying to do with 2 people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm surprised that those 2 people just halfway through the shift are just not going, I'm done, I've had it, I'm going home.
Conversely, have you ever turned up at an event and thought, wow, yeah, these guys are on it?
I've seen some obviously I'm not going to mention them, but I have seen some companies and I think, wow, okay. Fair play, you're really good. There's you know, we hear this all the time, there's enough work out there for all of us, as long as we do it properly, in the sense that go out there with the best intentions to do a really good job.
Yeah.
If you're going to go out there in the best intentions to make, you know, £50, £100, £250, but not do it right, then just, this is not for you.
Yeah.
You know, you need to kind of concentrate on your 9 to 5, whatever it is, and you know, maybe just do a bit more overtime there, because what that's doing is that's kind of it's skewing the figures in regards to, you know, what you should actually charge, you know, what a reputable company should charge to, you know, and then that gives doubt to the client that, well, actually, you know what, why is there such a price difference? Yeah. But that price is just never realistic.
It's the same in my field, you know, with the camera crane. There are people going out there for £250. Yeah. You know, these guys sometimes are standing there looking at the phones, checking social media when they're supposed to be filming. I've seen, you know, guys standing with a tripod just on the phone, looking at the phone while they're supposed to be filming. And it's just like, come on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're here for this couple. This couple have paid you a lot of money. I hasten to add that those people are few and far between, but they, you know, they do exist, and they, you're right, they should be sticking to their 9 to 5. So it's time for the one question that gets asked of everyone, which is when I find out whether you've actually listened to the podcast or not, because you'll know what the answer is. If I could give you the skills and the tools and the knowledge to do any other job within the wedding industry, what would you choose?
Probably, I think just from just from this fame aspect of it, it's got to be a DJ, hasn't it?
Really?
From the fame aspect of it. Because
a bit of limelighting.
Yeah, a bit of limelighting. And you know why? It's because at weddings, they get to sit on a table and eat.
As do the dog bears.
They get to sit on a table and eat. Yeah, so yeah, probably that, because they do bring energy to an event, and but at the same time, I think every part of this event is every person's important to
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, there's a business idea for it. I'll give you this one free of charge. What you should have is a pair of decks behind the bar, and be spinning numbers while you're serving.
Well, funny you say that. So, from our first ever bars that we made back in 1996, in there was a cassette player with speakers.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So if we were ever in this foyer, sometimes we're at the bar, has to be in the foyer area. We used to have our own little music there, and people used to spend a bit of time there.
Can't fault it. You're going back to the future. Yeah. That's what you should be doing.
Yeah.
So listen, Kesh, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for sparing me the time. I look forward to seeing you for a mocktail on the next event somewhere. Thanks, man.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Andy. Thank you.
Cheers. So there we go. That was episode 13. Fascinating chat with a fascinating man, and a very hard-working man. Always seems to be there early, usually before me, which is unusual. Always working, absolutely always working so hard, running around like 200 miles an hour, getting stuff sorted. Okay, so there we go. That's the end of episode 13. Onwards to episode 14, and we'll see you soon on the Wedding Professionals podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.